As we go through life, such as myself, we start thinking about death, losing people, what happens on the other side, or if there is even another side. But sometimes we don't think about what was before this. They call it heaven, but is it just reincarnation from one dimension to another, from one time period to another? Well, today we have Dr. David Bettenhauser and Carla Bogney Kidd, the authors of The Gift of Past Lives. It says, through meditation and regression, that reincarnation is real and that they have had over 29 past lives together. Maybe we've all met in a previous life. Well, today we're going to talk about that. Get your questions ready. I'm Tony Sweet with Truth Be Told. Please welcome to the Truth Be Told studios for the first time, Dr. David Bettenhauser and Carla Bogney Kidd. Hello, hello.
Hi, Tony.
Well, first I want to correct my intro. It's Bettenhausen.
That's okay.
Not Hauser. As soon as I said that, I was like, wait a minute, that wasn't it. So I apologize for that. And Carla, did I somewhat get your last name?
Oh, you got it spot on. Very good.
Perfect. All right. Well, now that that's out of the way. So, well, thank you for being here. And you've both have worked on several books together. And so, first of all, I want to see how, I mean, you said you've been 29 live past lives together. So this is this the 29th or is this the 30th? And
this is 29.
Well, yes, 29 together. Dave's had 42 lives and I've had 34.
Well, first of all, how do we calculate that? How do we find out how many lives we've been here? Because that's a lot. I mean, that sounds like exhausting, first of all.
So I guess the real answer to that is that's what our spirit guides have told us.
Got it.
So we didn't know how many lives we'd had together when we first had this experience. So it really started with a meditation experience. The office was getting horrible for me. Carla was my office manager. She came up and said, we've got to try something. We started to meditate. We had a small experience on the third day of meditating. And Carla's mother came to me. And Carla's mother had died 18 years before.
Oh, wow.
As a physician, I didn't think this was possible. We were both raised Catholic. Carla was a little more open to this possibility, but for stress reduce, we started to meditate. And on that third day, right after meditation, the patients started coming in. We started to run down the hall and I had to stop and say, Carla, I don't even know how to tell you this. I think I was talking to your mother. She was this happy, jovial lady. And she kept showing me this shoe. And I'll let Carla tell you what.
Well, I went over to the computer and I Googled ballroom dancing shoes, and 60 or 70 pairs showed up on the screen. And I said to Dave, which shoe? And he pointed to the exact shoe that my mother wore her entire life for ballroom dancing, for church, for dress up. It was a short pump, open-toed sandal. And I mean, out of all of those, for him to guess that, my sister also worked in the office at the time, and that took us back, both of us. Then my sister went to her purse and she pulled out a picture, showed it to Dave, and she said, is this who you were talking to? And Dave got very emotional and he said, yes, he had never met her. And that started us paying attention, and all we wanted to do was meditate. My only question was, why did she talk to you and not me? Well, this is because Dave has the gift to be able to connect immediately. I can meditate and hear things and see things, but he can talk to them just like we are right now.
So, Dave, I think there's a little feedback. Could you turn your audio down, the volume down just a little bit? I think
sure. That
might be just a little feedback. But, Dave, while she's doing that, do you consider yourself intuitive, a psychic?
I don't use the word psychic. I use the word mystic sometimes.
Okay.
I don't like to think it's a specific gift. I think that it's possible for anybody to become gifted if you spend enough time meditating.
Right.
And I think for some reason, Carla and I were both in an emotional state that required a little intervention. And so we were both kind of praying for each other, and it came at just the right time.
So meditation itself, being in a room alone, and like my, I always said, I have so, my ADD is so bad, it's so hard to quiet my mind. But how does meditation take you to that state where you can connect to your higher power or your spirit guide or even past lives? How does that work?
First, just let me say that I have ADD, and if I can shut my brain off, anybody can. Now, I'm not saying it's easy.
Right.
I sit and I meditate, you know, 20 to 30 minutes. If you're doing a lot of coffee and chocolate, you're never going to turn that brain off. But there's so many health benefits, and Dave will explain them to you. There's many reasons to meditate.
Yeah, and again, when all this experience happened, I was running out reading everything I could, because I didn't know any of this was possible. But we taught some meditation classes after this. But what we found out is meditation lowers blood pressure, lowers blood sugar, increases dopamine and serotonin, which is the drugs that are in everybody's antidepressant medication.
Right.
Increases melatonin, so you sleep better. It actually reduces stress, so it reduces cortisol, the stress hormone that makes you lose weight. When I started to meditate, I was trying to be my better self, but I actually lost 2 pounds a week for an entire year.
Oh my gosh.
Dropped 104 pounds. So everything that happened to us changed the way I felt emotionally, physically, all the way around. And so we were enjoying meditation. We met Isabella, my spirit guide. We met God one day. We met Carla's spirit guide, Isabella. We kept meditating. We didn't know where this was going until there was a day that I had a memory, and I was running on a beach in Boston. Now, it was in this life. I was 3 years old, running on a beach in Boston. It was 1962. My father had gone to graduate school in Boston, and I was from Nebraska. And so we had traveled across the country. And I had this memory. I was running on the beach in Boston. I saw the Ferris wheel in the background. I saw roller coasters, little souvenir shops. I was screaming and yelling, and this little girl ran out and pushed me down. She sat on my chest and gave me a kiss on the forehead. She jumped up, put both hands on her hips. She had this little rounded pot belly and a little two-piece blue ruffled bathing suit. And I was telling Carla the memory, and she looked at me.
And of course, I said, well, that was me, because I remember that memory. We were always meant to meet. I was the youngest girl of six, good Catholic family. Parents were always splitting up and getting back together. We were not well off, did not have a car. But that particular day, my father had rented two cabs and took all of us to Revere Beach. Now, Revere Beach isn't just sand and water. It has an amusement park with it and all those little souvenir shops. So as he started to talk about it, I knew exactly that it was Revere Beach. And I remembered that day because when we arrived, for whatever reason, I normally inherited a bathing suit from one of my sisters, and I didn't have one. So we went across the street to the souvenir shop, and my parents bought me my first brand new blue ruffled two-piece bathing suit. And it was etched in my memory. And so when Dave talked about that, I got the chill up my spine. I remembered it like it was yesterday. We didn't continue to keep in touch. We never saw each other or heard from each other again until, this was 1962.
Wow.
In 1998, Dave came in and bought the practice in Ohio where I was the office manager.
Talk about, well, they say nothing happens.
Nothing happens by coincidence.
By coincidence, yeah.
So we had that first experience, continued to meditate. A couple days later, I had another memory, so I had to share it with Carla. But the memory was I was standing in an alley, and I looked across the alley, and Carla was standing there. Now, I'll say Carla. It wasn't exactly Carla, but I knew it was Carla. She sort of looked like Carla. She had her hair slicked back. She had a little gold band on. Still had the same steel blue eyes, but she was wearing clothes from early in the 1900s or something. I didn't know. Ruffled fringed skirt and
flapper attire.
And she I was looking at her across this dark alley. I saw two large flashes, heard the loud bang, felt myself shot in the chest, and I was thrown on the ground. The next day I had another memory where I met this flapper at a wedding where she was singing as the wedding singer of a man named Angelo, and she worked for Angelo at his speakeasy. I asked her for breakfast, and she went to breakfast the next day, and during that memory, we took a walk along the Chicago coastline. And along the coastline, she told me her name was Ruby Donaldson. She was born in Bullock, Georgia, to James and Anna Donaldson, and she moved to Chicago to become a dressmaker and a singer. I thought, this is so strange. Where is this coming from? Carla went out and started looking for details.
Well, like everybody else, I just wanted to see if we could find some proof. You know, if you have a life 6,000 years ago, it's hard to get some proof. But if it was not that long ago, and I did get onto Ancestry.com, and I found Ruby Donaldson, born in 1904 in Bullock, Georgia, to Anna and James Donaldson, one of 11 children. Then I found newspaper articles of the wedding of Angelo Jenna to Lucille Spinola, January the 10th, 1925. Luckily, Dave had given me that date, so I could corroborate it. I found pictures of the wedding cake and some other wedding pictures where they were married at Ashland Auditorium. Over 3,000 mobsters were there. You know, unbeknown to us, Dave and I didn't realize that Angelo Jenna was the head mobster before Al Capone in Little Italy in Chicago. So we had some confirmation of this information. And of course, I couldn't wait to tell Dave. And that made us want to keep meditating to see what other stories we could come up with.
And we kept contacting and meditating, and we started to write down every picture, everything that we got, every memory, every communication from Isabella. And it was just every day when we came to the office, we had the first 30 minutes of just writing whatever was coming. And pretty soon we had enough information to write an entire book. Not our goal, but we started putting pieces of things together and looking at patterns and asking Isabella questions. And Carla's one of the most curious women I've ever met. So she will ask every question there is. And when we got done and started compiling these things, we had 42 lives for me and 34 for her. We put about 20 of them in the first book, plus all the lessons we learned. So at the end of every story that was about a life, we actually put down what we did wrong and what we had to learn from that life and what was supposed to happen in the next lives. And pretty soon this entire book showed up, and, you know, we had to do a little shuffling.
And Isabella says that, you know, everybody knows what the Ten Commandments are. And she said, I'll give you the shortened version. And she called it the Five Simple Rules for Living, because she said, if you live a life that is without conceit, jealousy, selfishness, and unforgiveness, and you do everything, make all your choices out of love and compassion, then you get off the karmic wheel. And when you think about it, if you put those in a column, everything that we do, negative and positive, all the negative ones fall somewhere under conceit, jealousy, selfishness, or unforgiveness. And if we can get past that, then we get off this karmic wheel and we won't return. So like Dave said, in the first book, our 20 stories that we have in there, at the end, karmically, we tell you what we were doing that was related to conceit. For instance, in one of my Chinese lives, I had my guard kill a man that was walking down the street just because I could. He got in my way. You know, we've all been saints and sinners. We've all done horrible things.
And we started to look at all of these lives, and we found a lot of patterns, just like Carla said. We've been saints and sinners. We've been slave and slave owner. We've been kings and queens and paupers. We've been Muslim and Christian and Jewish and almost everything, living on every side of everything. And we actually have a series of lives where we were Vikings fighting the Scottish, then we were Scottish fighting the English, then we were English fighting the Scottish, and in the next life, Carla was of Viking descent and back into the English lifetime. In such an extent that we realized we have been born on the same side or different side of the same war to learn compassion and love. Because if you don't have all those experiences, you really can't learn what real love is.
Don't, I mean, and that takes me to a point where I hear so many people use these. Oh my God, I do not want to come back. I'm, you know, and after this one, I'm done. I don't want to come back. Well, again, how do we know? Just because we say that doesn't mean that
we don't have, to, yes.
We
don't
don't have
we
a choice.
Get to make that choice. No.
It's not our
so,
choice. So,
but let's ask this: whose choice is that? We people call it God or higher power. What where do you think that source comes from to actually who makes that choice?
So you want to.
Well, our third book we wrote is called The Manual, ironically, because the manual tells you how God decides. God, along with your council, which is 12 of your peers who lived in previous lives with you, and your spirit guide, they, in between lives, you have a life review.
Mm-hmm.
Based on what you've done and what you've learned and what you haven't learned, they decide with you what's happening in your next life. For instance, our next door neighbor, we've had 21 past lives with him karmically.
Wow.
So we keep returning. We hope after this life that we won't have to, that we've healed it. But if we need to come back in another life because we weren't good to each other, then we will. But when you're planning those things, let's say I die at 50 and he doesn't die until 80, then I will sit and wait for him to come back so that we can then again return together and fix what we've done that wasn't right.
And so a lot of people will talk about soul family or soul groups.
Right.
And we do find that, but we've actually divided them into two. It's really your family mates and your karmic mates, because you have to come back with those people you've developed karma problems with also.
Does that
so, go
well,
ahead.
No, I was going to say with the group families and soul families, because I was just talking about this last night with someone about, you know, we meet people that we instantly don't care for, or we meet people we instantly feel like we've known forever. Mm-hmm. Is that what you would consider somebody that had probably been in our past life that maybe have treated us bad, or somebody that treated us good?
Absolutely, Tony. That's the people don't really realize that, but you do have those people that have been a thorn in your side more than once.
Right.
And you're still trying to somehow get over that. And the goal is to make everyone in that same group your family mates or your soul family. But some of them we have to grow, and they have to grow. And so we're helping each other along on the path.
What if, okay, put it this way. When I was in high school, like most of us, I struggled with school. Like I'm a more of a street smart person than I was a book smart person. And then I had a friend who was, I mean, he could glance at a book and pretty much know everything about the book. So he was definitely far ahead of me when it came to book smart. So what if one of our soul groups definitely learned their lesson early and only needed, I mean, is there a number of times that we are supposed to come back, or can somebody come here twice and just go, wait a minute, he was just way advanced and not have to come back after two or three times?
Well, Isabella tells us that there's only two people that came for one lifetime. That was Jesus and Muhammad.
Hmm.
And yes, some people have shorter times than others. Apparently, Dave and I haven't figured it out.
Right.
Yes, we're not quick learners, apparently.
Because we're over 6,000 years now,
right,
since our first one.
But I think if you're looking at it, I think that right now most people could have had up to maybe 50 or 60, 70,
80
possibly
tops.
80 tops lives.
Wow.
But early on, people returned slower. I know that seems weird, but the population has grown, so we have to actually turn souls over a little faster now. So the time between lives is shorter now.
Well, somebody was in the chat room asking me, Tony, have you had any? And I have had a past life regression. It was live on air several years ago, and I honestly, because ADD, I didn't think I could. So maybe you can guide me through this. And so it was actually through Zoom, and she started, you know, go, you know, relax, you know, clear your mind. And I'm in my head, I'm like, grocery list, I'm going to work out after this. But as she started talking about it, she's, you know, walk, you know, imagine yourself walking down the stairs and okay, blah, blah, and all of a sudden I saw myself, I don't know why, as an old man in a house. It looked like I had an easel, paints, you know, an orchard, and I had, and I thought, okay, am I imagining this? Am I making this up? Is she is she guiding me? Or is she creating this in my mind for me? Because she didn't create the man and the house and anything. So, and I,
a good regression therapist won't give you any.
Right, and she didn't. Yeah, and so, and then she says, "Do you have a name?" And I said, "I think." And then I said, "I said a name." And I figured out it was in England, and one of my arts hung in a castle. Don't know what castle, it was just. And lo and behold, I did look that an artist up, and there was one from the 1400s of that same name of an artist. But I was like, oh my gosh, that kind of freaked me out a little bit. So I'm assuming that was considered one of my past lives. But
yeah,
correct.
But so. Like, that's my question is, how do you find that person, or how do you believe that just because you're imagining it or seeing it, that it's a real past life? How do you determine what is what? If you don't have the proof, like you said, you looked the lady up and you found that, and I looked this gentleman up and I found a name that just happened to be there. But how do you prove that that's one of your lives, past lives?
So, Tony, if I answer this question honestly, you can't.
Right. Right.
Okay, I'm gonna tell you, past life regression and all hypnosis does have some suggestibility.
Right.
So I think it's very difficult. Now, the things you can know is that if you look up the science of this, during hypnosis, during the time between wake and sleep, when most people also have experiences, and during meditation, in the brain, we have increase in alpha and theta waves that occur, that only occurs when you're having increased memory.
Hmm.
So if you carry these memories in your subconscious during those states, it is possible to bring those memories up. That at least supports the fact, and it, you know, and if they do MRIs of the brain, you can find that those memory centers do seem to glow or have increased blood flow during regression, hypnosis, time between wake and sleep. So it at least hints at the fact that it makes sense, that that's when it would occur. The other things that we know about the brain, and again, it's not the brain necessarily, it's increased blood flow into certain areas of the brain so that the brain can read whatever the memory is. But what we know is that the brain picks up chunks of information, and it kind of floats in your brain, and it goes into specific modules that constitute a memory. Those aren't physical places. Those are places that will light up with increased blood flow. So if we look at those, just like, I'm going to give you an example. The first time you burn yourself, you pull back. The second time you burn yourself, you pull back faster. That little memory is saved. We believe that your past life memories are saved that way too. So even if you have amnesia, you still have a subconscious memory. So most people remember their most violent memories when they have past life regression first. Traumatic. Well, if you were shot in an alley by a mobster in your past life and you remember that, you're careful when you go into a dark alley and try to meet a flapper. Okay. So that module can get stirred up. So past lives could be a little bit protective. So even in a survival of the fittest mode, having a reincarnated soul protects and lets you survive longer.
Well, that I would think that if we keep coming back in reincarnation, and we'll get into the reincarnation part here in a second, is you would think God, the creator, or even your soul group would want to remind you of what you were like the time before so you can try to change it in this life. But for some reason, many of us don't remember anything about our past lives other than a feeling of, I don't like that person. But we continue to make the same mistakes over and over and over and over. So why do we need to wipe this away from the past lives so we can, like, you know, because what I learned in second grade, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, led me to graduating from high school and led me into the college. So I gradually learned all that stuff. But if I have to start from scratch every time I come back, what's that point?
You cannot possibly remember it all. Even with everything that Dave and I have documented with our 29 past lives together, and we have, the details are unbelievable. Even like in our first book has 20 stories, and we had to cut a lot of the details because it's almost a 400 page book as it is. Right. But we know our names, where we were born, where we lived, who all of our children were, who, by the way, are all part of soul groups usually, what we died from, the age we were. And I, you know, the older you get, you can't remember everything. If you could imagine trying to remember all of your lives and everything, you'd be so confused. Mm-hmm. You couldn't even do it.
And we only know parts of these past lives because it's impossible to remember it all.
Everything.
It's protective. You would be so confused.
However, a good clue. In the manual, we talk about how our astrological sign is directly related to the angel that we have. And why is that? And in the manual, there's a color chart that shows how the astrological signs, there's a lot of 12s in the universe, a lot of 12s. You know, there's the 12 astrological signs, there's the 12 traits, there's the 12 archetypes. I like to throw in, there's the 12 donuts and a dozen.
And a dozen, you know?
That's the best one.
Yeah, all of those things. There's a lot of 12s. There's the 12 apostles. I mean, we could go on and on, and we do list a lot of those 12s in the manual. But anyway, they're broken into four sections of three. And, you know, I know a lot of astrologers will differ with us, but we're just telling you what our spirit guides have told us. We don't make this stuff up. We are not that smart. We only write down what they tell us. So they tell us that unlike they normally say that, you know, you begin with Capricorn, but our guides tell us that we begin with Aquarian. So Aquarian, Pisces and Aries are in one group. And I'm just going to pull the book because, like I just said to you, we can't remember everything. Right. There's no way to remember all of this. It's absolutely impossible. But they're all mixed into groups of threes and an angel that is assigned to you. So Aries, Pisces, and Aquarius, they fall under the yellow angel of Mariel's legion. That is the angel of selfishness. Does that mean you're selfish now? No, it means that in a past you have had that tendency. So God was ever so kind to give you an angel to help you. Okay. Now, when you go next to that, you have Taurus, Gemini, and Cancer. And they have the pink angel from Shamuel's legion. That is the angel of conceit. That doesn't mean you look in the mirror all day, every day. It means that you had to have a tendency to think your way is the best. And maybe you, you know, push that in a past life. It doesn't mean you're that way now. The next three are Leo, Virgo, and Libra. They have the green angel from Raphael's legion of jealousy. Again, you know, we don't read this and write this and think, oh, we're horrible people if we fall into that sign. It takes all kinds.
Right.
We have been all different astrological signs because we need to learn. And then the last one is Scorpio, Sagittarian, and we actually end with Capricorn. And that is the red angel of Uriel's legion of unforgiveness. So when you read the manual and you put together your astrological sign and you can read it, and you'll say, my girlfriend told me the other day, when I started reading, I said, oh no, I don't want to read this. And I said, the idea is to self-evaluate. Yeah, I mean, how else are you going to learn right. and evolve? And then you learn your trait, and then you learn your archetype. And of those three, the archetype is the only one that we pick ourselves. With the guidance of our spirit guide, they will suggest to us that we pick a certain one to help us. And you can always tell when we don't pick the right one, when we're stubborn and we do what we want. Because I have a friend that's a nurse. She was told to be a caregiver archetype, and she didn't want to be. She chose explorer. And she is 38 years old. She doesn't want to commit to anybody or anything. She wants to just keep exploring all of her options, and consequently, she's single. But it does, it falls right into place. When you read it, you can ask your friends, which one do you think I am? And you read it yourself, and you can kind of pick, because the only one that we know for sure is our astrological sign.
I love it. And for everybody just tuning in, we have Dr. David Bettenhausen and Carla Bogni-Kidd. We're talking about their book, The Gifts of Past Lives. And I'm excited to have you here just because, again, so many people, I've had people on my show before about this, but like I said, this topic, everybody, you know, they say there's two things you can't, you know, get away from: taxes and death. And yeah. we all go in that direction. I mean, we all get older, we all die, our loved ones die. And that leads me to my question is, when, let's say my mother passed away, she passed away 3 years ago, and she was definitely, I could definitely feel there was a connection, the mother connection, but also I was actually kind of a parent. I was her parent for many years of my life. But once someone dies in your group, once they get on the other side, can they help you mm-hmm. grow
yes.
even over on the other side?
Definitely.
Yes. There's kind of a interesting thing. They can actually serve sort of as a secondary spirit guide, if you want to call it that. Without the spirit, they can take on a role. Carla's mother has actually worked as a gatekeeper so that some of those people that are waiting to come back won't try to reach out to us. You know, it could be over. Well, they may have some negative energy because if they're coming back, they haven't completed all their lessons. Also, those people that have to come back would love to be able to influence the world they're going to return to.
Mm-hmm.
So if they can influence you to prepare the world for them, it could make their life easier. Well, if they're coming back, they're coming back because it's not necessarily supposed to be easier. We actually learn through adversity. People are always concerned about, you know, how could God create evil and why do we have to face adversity? Well, we face adversity because we're human and we needed the fight or flight to start with, but we don't really need the fight or flight now. And so now we're on that path where we are trying to go to love. But to start with, we had to fight against something. We have to feel like we survive. And to feel like you survive is a way to feel successful, and people need to feel like they have some amount of success.
Yeah.
And also, my sister is the one that passes over the people in our soul group. She is completed, and she passes people over. The one thing that Dave didn't say is the reason my mother, as our gatekeeper, stops negative people talking to us is because, like when you go to a psychic or a medium, you're not supposed to ask the future. Why? Because they're not supposed to influence our choices. We have free will for a reason.
Right.
And the reading that they give you today is not necessarily what's going to happen. It's only today. We have free will and we make choices. So we shouldn't be influenced. You know, if we want to know if we're on the right path or something like that, that's one thing. So yes, your mother could be right there with you. Do you feel her close?
You know, ever since I lost my mother, for the past 2 years, what I've been seeing is angel numbers 222, which is funny. We just had 222222, which means angel number that what many have told me is you are on your life path that you're supposed to be on. And so I'm taking that as a sign from her, and because I didn't see those numbers until after she passed away. So I'm assuming that's what,
well, and
what
you're
it
doing
means.
You're doing your part, Tony. You know, when you do these podcasts and put on your television, radio shows, and et cetera, it's really a matter of reaching out and trying to share a positive message.
Right.
And one of the positive message right now is we are really eternal and death is nothing to fear.
Right. And I'm getting to that point. I sit, especially after my mother passed away and my father's 86 with Parkinson's and his health is declining. I look at death completely, completely different than what I looked at it before, which it did kind of scare, not necessarily scare me. It was the unknown. But when my mother told me before she passed away, she says, my mother came to visit me. And I said, Grandma Rose, because my mom's maiden name was Rose. My last name is Sweet. Sweet Rose, get it. but she said, no, my mother, because she didn't know her real mother. Her real mother left her when she was 1 year old. My mom was born in 1939, so this was 1940. My mom passed away 3 years ago, so she never knew her real mother. And so she said her real mother came to visit her right before she passed away, and I was like, oh my gosh, wow. That. And she said, and she used to tell me, I see people coming in my room, but I look and nobody's there. So I was assuming that they were coming to greet her. And that's exactly what
happened. I
believe
that's true, Tony.
Yeah. No, I believe that's true also. So it gave me comfort that even her mother, who she never knew, was still there looking out for her. So that was very nice. That was nice to hear.
Really,
Tony,
nice.
only because I feel your discomfort and anguish with your father. My father passed away with Parkinson's. He was actually diagnosed at 51.
Oh, wow. He was
and lived till 83.
Wow. Yeah.
And it was a long time. In the end, it was not his best times.
Yeah. My dad's getting to that point. We noticed it in his early 70s, but now he's 86, going on 87, and it's definitely getting to that point where we can see it taking away his joys in life. You know, he likes to work in the garden and all that stuff. Yeah.
Part of it is the mask. He can still have joy, but he can't show it.
Right. Right. Yeah. Definitely. There's a veil of keeping. So, but that being said, it's, you know, let's go back to karma. And reincarnation and karma, do you believe that we bring karma from our previous life that could give you the diseases or, you know, give you the tragedies in your life? Or do we choose those just because it was to help other people, not necessarily yourself, but to help others?
Some of it can be messages for others. You know, I don't believe any 3-year-old dies of
karma.
Cancer as a punishment to the 3-year-old.
Right. Yeah, I agree with that.
You know, that's a lesson for somebody else's lesson. And then I have to tell you, Tony, because I got to experience my father's last past life review, and it was very interesting. Again, two lives ago, a couple lives ago anyway, my father was a slave trader and chained people into the bottom of his boat. He split families up and he brought them across the seas to Bermuda and then to the Americas. The next life, he lost a child that was abducted, and his wife died during childbirth, and then his other son was killed to show him what it was like to split families. And the very next life, he was my father, and he got Parkinson's, and he spent the last 20 years of his life chained in a wheelchair, just as he did the slaves. So there are some things there you have to learn. Now, my father was a great man, wonderful, nice guy. He tried to be positive. He was the most positive person I'd ever seen being in a wheelchair for that period of time. you know, even falling asleep during his Parkinson's, he'd be like, Dave, we're going to watch the football game. If I fall asleep, just take notes and tell me who's ahead when I wake up.
And Isabella always says, it's not what happens to us in life, but how we choose to react to it.
Yeah. Yeah. And why?
He could have been bitter. He wasn't.
Right. And that's, you know, how many times have we all said this? Why is it always the good die young? Or why is it all, in, you know, it seems like the meanest ones live to be 150. You know, it seems like, sometimes you wonder if the mean ones, as we consider it, are paying a price or
still learning.
Yeah,
they're paying a price because there's something that's still making them unhappy.
Or right. They're here for somebody else.
Right. Well, you talked about being Catholic, and you know, religion sometimes has, especially when it comes to reincarnation, because you know, when a lot of Christians, you know, hey, when you die, you've got the streets of gold, eternal life, you know, but they don't necessarily always believe in reincarnation. So past lives only can exist with reincarnation. So how did you reconcile being Catholic? I mean, I'm not Catholic, so I don't know how they look when they consider reincarnation.
Certainly Catholics don't believe in reincarnation currently.
Currently.
Now,
okay.
We wrote our second book, which is Hell No Reincarnation, to try to reconcile our past life memories with growing up Catholic. And what we really found is we started doing the research, and of course, 33% of the world's population believes in reincarnation. 20% of Christians say they do. If you start to go back and look at the history, even in the Bible,
right,
you would see that every time the Jews failed to keep their covenant, God gave them another chance. And in fact, so they went through the covenant of Adam, and they went through Abraham and Moses and Noah and King David, and each time he renewed the covenant, and each time they failed.
Right.
And so if you look at that story, and if you know that the Jewish faith currently still has tenets of reincarnation, and they believe that you may have to reincarnate if you have not finished all 613 of the mitzvahs, which are like the many commandments for them. So if you haven't finished them all, you need to come back because your job is not done. In fact, the book of Leviticus uses the word kata, which is the word that we have ended up translating to sin. But kata really means failed to reach your goal.
Oh, wow.
And so the book of Leviticus is all about atonement and how to make your body pure. And if you haven't if you failed to meet your goal, is it abnormal that you would come back in another life to try to reach your goal? That was part of the reconciliation. And then we started talking and doing more research, and we found that 200 AD, Origen of Alexander, who was one of the early bishops of the Catholic Church, even though they didn't really call it Catholic, his writings include transmigration of the soul, preexistence of the soul. He actually says Jesus was created, not begotten. Again, that's the teaching that's occurring 200 years after the time of Jesus. So we don't have the early church leaders are doing this. It's not till Justinian in about the year 400 AD when he goes back and they have a council and they actually excommunicate Origen 200 years after his death and say, no, we're not going to go with this thing because you can't go with reincarnation. Otherwise, you can't use the doctrine that Jesus died for all of our sins. Because the reality is we're all responsible for our own sins.
I was going to say that would change any reincarnation if that was the case.
Correct.
Wow. Well, because of time, I can't believe this is going so fast, but I think there is going to be a part two. Since, truth be told, we talk about all kinds of subjects, paranormal, UFOs, all this stuff. Can you kind of touch on how this subject of reincarnation and past lives relate to other theories like extraterrestrials and the Sumerians and the Book of Enoch and all that. I mean,
okay,
that's
sure.
fascinating because it's like, well, if we're living and we're on this planet and then they're saying there's a lot of planets out there, does that mean we have past lives in other planets and other universes and galaxies? And
all right, so let's bring in near-death experiences because that's a form of consciousness that exists outside of the body.
Right.
And so when you compare many of the near-death experiences to reincarnation atonement experiences, they're very much alike. There's the feeling of overwhelming love. There's a lot of times a past life review. There's often spiritual beings. All of those things that we would expect to see in the spiritual or heaven realm, if you want to call it that. If you start to look at every story that's ever been, if you want to talk about the Anunnaki, we're talking about some sort of being spiritual that comes from the sky that started humanity. And as far as the Sumerians, if you're talking about Egyptians, they're talking about reincarnation and returning as a god. If you're talking about the gods of Mount Olympus or the pyramids, they're both mountains because gods never lived with us. If you're talking about the god of Abraham, you're talking about a god who lives up in space or heaven somewhere else. Every one of those stories is really parallel stories, and each one of them has a chief god and lesser god. Even if you read the Old Testament, you start to read about lesser Yahwehs. If you read it in Hebrew, you read about spiritual angels. One of the angels is called the lesser Yahweh. Things that we don't know in Western, you know, English written biblical studies. If you're talking about the Book of Enoch, you're talking about fallen angels. And I'm going to tell you what Isabella says about the Book of Enoch. Because we have spirit guides and because we return after we've had a life, the watchers are actually our spirit guides who don't come down here and us who return, because the fallen angels are not the Nephilim. The fallen angels are us. And we return to heaven, we return to life here as Enoch envisioned. We return to life here as a reincarnated soul. And of course we marry and have more children and bring our evil back to the world.
Wow.
So that's what Enoch was seeing. Now, if you're talking about beings on other planets, we can talk about astral projection, out-of-body experiences, reincarnation, near-death experiences, are all experiences where our mind consciousness leaves our body. All of those can be confused as the same experience because we don't have reference. So certainly an alien abduction may feel the same as a near-death experience.
And I've heard that by many people.
Okay. And so I'm not sure that there's an alien taking them, but your mind has left your body and you're gone to a place that's crystalline where nobody looks the same and lights are everywhere. And you may have thought you're abducted and you may have had spiritual experience much like a near-death experience. If you're talking about aliens, I have to talk about the alpha constant, which is 1/137, which is the Planck's constant and a bunch of things multiplied together. If you talk about the alpha constant, there is no life away from this galaxy that would resemble the life on this galaxy. It's fine-tuned to such a point that life can only exist the way we exist here. And so if there's life anywhere else, it won't be a life form that looks like us, that acts like us. So when people think they're abducted and they see somebody with a head that looks human, it's some sort of other spiritual experience because they wouldn't look human. They would probably be crystalline. They wouldn't be carbon-based, oxygen-breathing.
The eyeless, because we don't have senses.
Yes, and they see them as eyeless many times. They're dark eyes. They don't see any eyes.
Big head.
Because they're just filling in the details as best they can with what they remember from their earthly experience.
Through fear.
Through fear, because they don't understand what they're seeing. So I believe it's a spiritual experience and not an abduction experience.
I interviewed, and the name escapes me right now, but I interviewed someone that was talking about an abduction, and it, and I even told him, I said it sounded, because it was such a pleasant experience, I said it felt more like a angelic vision and experience than it was an alien abduction. And he said, which it was possibly, could possibly have been. So, but yeah, that was, it was such a, just an, a positive experience that it just didn't even seem like it was an alien abduction. Because when you say alien abduction, it seems like a very negative experience.
Experience. You would right. think so.
Yeah. Well,
they were experimenting with you and sticking needles in
right,
you and
right,
all sorts of
right.
terrible things.
Yeah,
and we're all aliens.
Yes,
right.
We all come from somewhere else before here.
Yeah.
That's true. That's true. And the last question is that past lives, reincarnation, is that really kind of giving us proof that God or gods exist? And do you feel like there is one God, or do you feel like there's many gods that are overseeing all this?
I think there's one intelligent designer.
With a lot of help with from angels and spirit guides.
Yes, when we talk about lesser beings in, that are spiritual, I think that's the spirit guides, the angels that we've been hearing about forever, which I think are the same people when you hear about the Anunnaki and the people they sent, or the same people when you hear about Zeus and lesser gods. I think those are the same communication that's coming down that has been coming down for thousands of years.
Yeah. No, I always thought the Greek mythology, I'm like, it just, it seemed too real to be a myth. So somehow I believe that somehow they existed and, you know, came to this earth for some reason through vision or through, you know, ship, whatever you want to call it. But well, thank you both so much, and definitely there's so many more questions I have for you, but unfortunately our time's up. But can you tell us about where people can find your books, and do you have any speaking engagements and other events coming up?
Well, we're just starting to work on the speaking engagements because we've been sort of COVID bound. We've done a few group engagements online, but we'll be planning those in the future.
That's great.
People can reach us at our website, which is thegiftofpastlives.com. We do answer the if you contact us through there, we do answer your emails. And all of our books are available on thegiftofpastlives.com. We have a Facebook page, Reincarnation and the Gift of Past Lives with Mother Isabella, God, and Elizabeth, that people can look for. And also just Mother Isabella, God, and Elizabeth is a second Facebook page that's out there if people want to try to reach us.
That's great. And we, truth be told, thanks you, and our audience thanks you, and we really appreciate you being on the show. And for everybody out there, you know, we, truth be told, thank you for always tuning in, because Monday we have Robert Hensley doing the Minuteman Report. Wednesday you have Bonnie Burkert, who does the Truth Be Told Transformation. And then, of course, I'm every Friday. And we have some great shows coming up. But today we had Dr. David Bettenhausen and Carla Bogney-Kidd talking about their latest book, The Gift of Past Lives, with Mother Isabella, God, and is Elizabeth. So until next time, I'm Tony Sweet, and we'll see you real soon. And thank you both for being on Truth Be Told.
Thanks
for Tony.
Having us,
Take
Tony.
Care. Bye-bye.
Good night.
This has been another episode of Truth Be Told. Thank you so much for watching. Recorded live at UBN Go Studios in Burbank, California. Join us on social media. Facebook, Truth Be Told Radio. Instagram, Truth Be Told Paranormal. Go to Truth Be Told Worldwide for more information on upcoming shows.